Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. And it's actually a podcast that we were always scheduled to do, but it's turned into a little bit of an impromptu emergency podcast. What's up, brother?
Nueva New York.
That would be New York.
Oh, you're right. That's like Nueva York.
The La Liga.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've been hijacked.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a podcast where we kind of delved into La Liga. And we're still going to do that.
We'll talk a little bit about La Liga. Yeah,
but it's going to take a little bit of a different form, at least at the start here, as it was announced, at least, I don't know when the exact time was, but I woke up this morning and saw it, that La Liga will be playing a competitive fixture each year for presumably the next 15 years, and I would think beyond, in North America.
Starting, we believe, possibly this season, which is incredible. I would imagine it would have been more prudent to say next season, but the reports that we had, in the press release by Relevant Sports, who are the US-owned promotion, football promotion company, and La Liga, they didn't set a date for the first game.
Very few details were released,
no.
Including the country, whether it be Canada or the United States, that's still not clear. Now, Relevant Sports is owned by Stephen Ross, who is also a partial owner of the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins and Hard Rock Stadium housed the Barcelona-Real Madrid match last summer,
right,
which was a pretty big success as far as summer matches go.
It's a preseason game that was fun, and it was, Neymar's last stand for Barcelona.
Right, so Stephen Ross, a representative of Relevant Media, has already said, Relevant Sports has already said that, look who our owner is. Obviously, I think you can conclude from that where we'd like to have that game played, which is Miami and Hard Rock Stadium. Boy, I hate this.
It's terrible.
I hate this. I hate it when the NFL goes to play in London. I don't have as big of a problem with it when baseball goes to play in Japan or Puerto Rico because it's, let's be honest.
Or when they go to London as well, will be at West Ham.
Exactly.
It's
a 162 game season, so while I still don't like it, I understand that one a little bit more. And part of my frustration in this is that I can't quite find the words to tell you why I hate it. I just do.
I can find the words.
Okay. Help me out.
The words are domestic league. You know, what you're getting won't be in a La Liga game. It just won't be. It'll be two teams playing in America, but it will be a pastiche, a knockoff of what you would get if you went to either of the two cathedrals of European football for a Real Madrid-Barcelona game. And let's be honest, folks, that's what it's going to be. It's not going to be Valladolid or whoever's in the league over the next few years, Girona or Levante or whatever. It's not going to be those teams. It's going to be the big teams coming over. And it affects the integrity of that league itself. It really does. I mean, what happens to the round robin system? Someone has to give up a home game or an away game? It is this. La Liga is struggling to match, as many other leagues are, to match the dominance and the hierarchy of the Premier League and the money that the TV revenues have there. And instead of playing maybe, as Rory Smith of the Times suggested, play the longer game and have more expansive TV rights at a knockdown price, be, as he said, the lost leader, and then get eyeballs on it across the globe and then slowly but surely build it up. They're not. They're making a quick trip over a few years to the biggest cash machine in world football, which is the United States. That's what they're doing. This has got nothing to do, by the way, Relevant Sports put out a vomit-inducing, this was my reaction this morning when I read their press release.
Wow.
Vomit-inducing, we're going to help grow the game in North America. No, you're not. There are a million ways you could do that. This is not one of them. This is you being capitalists, seeing a moment on which you can make money out of a need on behalf of a foreign entity to make money, to expand itself and create a bigger revenue stream. That's all it is. And I don't blame them for that. I blame La Liga. I hold La Liga hugely responsible for
right.
this.
Right. I don't blame Relevant Sports one bit.
They're doing what America has done to sports forever.
Right. And look,
is to take a niche or a commodity that people enjoy and gets popular, to take it and monetize it for their own gain.
And they do make some point in that. For the American soccer fan, it is, like, I know you say it's going to be a watered-down version.
It's a disaster for the American soccer fan.
It's not a disaster. How is it a disaster? I agree with you on most of this, but why is it a disaster?
Because it's the same way you had no interest, Andrew, or very little interest, in going to see Spurs-Roma in Harrison, New Jersey. You didn't. And I didn't blame you. Because it's not, first of all, it wasn't a league game. It wasn't a European game. It was nothing of that nature. Obviously, because it's in the United States. Geography matters. Going to these things matters.
You're absolutely right. However, there is a key difference. You know, if I don't want to go see Spurs play Roma, part of it is because I don't want to see Tottenham and Roma's D squad. You're now talking about a league game where presumably, like you say, they're going to bring big clubs. They already said El Clasico's not coming, so get that out of your mind now. But I would presume certainly at the start, Real Madrid or Barcelona will be involved in some way because
those are the teams that will definitely be involved.
They need to make a splash. So instead of seeing Real Madrid's C squad, you're going to see Bale, Benzema, Casemiro, like, you're guaranteed of seeing their best team coming over here. So that is part of the allure for the American soccer fan, and why it helps.
Domestic football is about going to White Hart Lane.
You're
it's
right.
about going to the Parc des Princes.
Well, here's the biggest...
I know I'm laughing saying that's...
Yeah, that's where you went to next?
It's about going to the Westfalenstadion. It's about going to the Olympic Stadium in Rome. It's about all those things.
Now, what they would tell you is... Nobody's stopping you from doing that. This is where you dip your toe in the water, you catch the bug, and now you're flying over to Spain because you want to see the real thing.
Or you're buying the package to watch it at home.
So that is what they would tell you. Here's my problem is the American soccer fan ultimately does benefit from this. I disagree.
Fine,
we disagree. But moving off of that, the problem I have is, okay, so now Real Madrid is coming over here. And let's say they're playing Alaves, because that's what it's probably going to be. Like what we saw in London with the NFL. It would always be like the Patriots against the Jaguars, like a really high-profile good team to get people excited, and then a lower team that will just take that home game away from them because, you know, whatever, they're insignificant. Well, if you're Alaves and you're that fan base, the biggest day of your year as a fan, as a season ticket holder, is gone. Real Madrid or Barcelona coming to play you, and again, I don't know that that's going to be what the game is. I'm using that as an example because I can only surmise that that's exactly what's going to happen because that model has proven to work.
Right.
And I hate that. And it just feels, we talk all the time about, you know, commercialism intruding into sports, which at its core is not supposed to be about that. There's a lot of things that we're willing to make concessions on, and we have stadium naming rights, sponsorships on the front of jerseys, because ultimately those things don't really compromise the game in any way, shape, or form.
This does.
But this, to me, does. And this, to me, compromises the fan experience, the true fan. And, you know, I take that back, because I consider myself a true fan of Tottenham. So that's unfair to say to people in America.
But, Andrew...
But the season ticket holders, people like that who have invested their, you know, their entire lives into this club, it just feels... I got into Tottenham knowing that this was part of the deal. That I don't get to watch them play on a regular basis at their stadium. I get to wake up every weekend, watch them, listen to the podcast, immerse myself in their culture as much as I can. But I got into it knowing this is part of the trade-off of getting into the sport. I can't go to the ground every weekend. Fans who bought season tickets for Espanyol or Gijón or clubs like that, that wasn't part of the deal when they got into it. They did believe, I'm going to get to see Real Madrid this year. I can bring my kid to see Barcelona. I hate that that's being ripped away from them. This is commercialism intruding into the sport in a way that we haven't really seen yet in soccer. And we knew it was coming. The U.S. has been doing it, like I said, with all its major sports. You know, we just saw La Liga also sign this right with Facebook to broadcast games in India. So you know... This was step one.
But they've already changed kickoff. They're changing kickoff times in the Premier League to suit India. They've changed the. We had a. Personally, I believe that the that El Clasico games should be played in the dark, not in the middle.
I've always said big games are meant to be played at night,
under lights.
Yeah, I agree.
And yet, last season, what did we have for the Asian market?
Bright sunshine.
Bright sunshine. Yeah. Oh, I didn't want to see it.
I agree with you. I'm
look, but here's the thing for me about this is the whole experience of domestic football, the home away, is just so important and intrinsic to it. And if you mess with that, you are messing with the integrity of the league.
You're right.
You are. And that's my problem.
And that's absolutely true. And ultimately, in the NFL, if you want to send a crap team to go get beat up by the Steelers in London, that's fine because, okay, like, if you're going to send the Browns to play Pittsburgh, just pulling an example out of thin air, in London, you know, the Browns are going to be bad no matter what. Ultimately, there's no real repercussion. You know, if Alaves loses a home game where maybe they can pull out a draw at home against Real Madrid, they're now losing a home game. Real Madrid will be, it'll be a home crowd for them in whatever North American venue they play in. You know, the repercussion for them is relegation. Like,
yeah,
it's different.
It is different. And, you know, for years, they sent the crap team to London because guess what? Their fan base, the crap team was probably a very new venture. Here's another point as well. The NFL, a lot of these franchises, you know, they're not around these clubs, these teams, they're not around that long. And so their fans will, you know, they'll eat a turd sandwich every now and again because guess what? You're bottom. You can be bullied into going to London.
Yeah, but I don't like that either.
I don't like it either. But that's just the way it was. I mean, they sent those teams over because they're, I mean, basically, I know the New York Giants went during their Super Bowl winning season, but this is different. And I don't like to compare them because, you know, like you said, relegation is such a part of a league season. And to think, I don't know, it just feels wrong that a team is playing thousands of miles away and the fan around the corner who's grown up an Espanyol fan all his life has been, you know, he's a diehard. He has the tattoos. He has his routine. He goes for a drink somewhere and then he goes to the stadium and he meets these friends afterwards. And that stadium's empty on a weekend because they're playing Barcelona in the Barcelona Derby in Miami. Just,
yeah.
It rubs me the wrong way. And it the values and the core of the domestic game is that you play home and away and you travel within your country.
Now, here's the problem. The problem is, ultimately, I believe that this does and this will work. Like, if the point of this is to make vast amounts of money, that will happen. The point of this is to continue the growth and popularity in an emerging market, I believe that that will happen, too.
I'm not
sure. Well, all I can go off of is what we've seen. And I do believe that the NFL going to play in London has 100% increased awareness and popularity of the NFL in a new emerging market in England. I was over in England a few years ago, and I took a tour of Wembley, my wife and I, and at, you know, one of the parts of the tour, they take you down into the locker rooms, and you see where, you know, they've got a portion of the locker room where all the England kits are set up, and it's, oh, wow, this is England's locker room. And then you kind of go next door into, like, an adjacent locker room, and there you see they have on display all of the NFL jerseys of the teams that have played there in what is used as an NFL locker room. And the guy, the tour guide, this older gentleman who's probably in his, like, late 60s, I'd say, he's talking about it, and he seems really enthusiastic, and I'm wondering, is this just, like, is Wembley just, like, trying to get these guys to whatever? So I talked to him, and there were a couple other people around afterwards. And I was like, you know, I'm an American. I love the NFL. Is it actually a big deal here? And he looked me dead in the eye, and he said, oh, no, this isn't just a passing fad. The people here are into this. Other people on the tour were saying that, oh, yeah, my son's starting to follow. He knows these guys. Like,
Why it works.
You
didn't even need this story. Look at me. Before I set foot in this country, I watched the Super Bowl on the BBC, their first televised Super Bowl, and became a New York Giants fan. Straight out of that.
Yeah, but
and
the Super Bowl is one thing. We're talking about games involving whatever teams in the middle of October.
Yeah, I have friends back home, and they will stay up in the, if it's a good game, if it's not on the West Coast time, because those are really late for us, if they'll watch a game. The Sky had it for years. I'd come in the evening of a Sunday, and I would watch an NFL game because it'd be like 6 o'clock kickoff. It would be the 1 o'clock. Of course.
Right, but I don't know that Sky are willing to go in and even make that a possibility where they're going to partner with the NFL to air games if games weren't being played in London. And now you are aware. If there was never any talk of going to play the Jaguars and Patriots in London, then I don't think London television markets are getting involved. Maybe they will, but I don't think the awareness would be nearly what it is because of what they've done. And I really believe that it works.
But there's an awareness here of La Liga. I still think it's accessible. It's not some...
It is, but this goes back to what you said before. It's not about just the awareness of the league. Yeah, we all know that it exists. It's about trying to catch the Premier League. That's what the Liga right now is the number two league in the world. They don't think in their minds that they should be number two.
Right.
They want to be number one. They feel like this is a step they have to take to do that.
Which is just abysmal, because I remember my reaction to Scudamore. By the way, this has been floated by the Premier League before La Liga decided to
make... Oh, yeah, the 39th game.
Yeah, which is, again, can't do it.
Yeah.
For me, Sachin Nakrani of the Guardian said he'd be done with the Premier League if that was the case.
I saw you tweet that.
No, I genuinely think that fans are going to be, especially fans who are based in those countries, there's a lot of hard decisions that are going to be made. But
that is what you said there, though, what he said, I'd be done with the Premier League, or any La Liga fan who feels that way right now. To me, that's another reason why this model works, because people love the sport too much. And they're not going to be done with
again,
it. And for whatever older fans...
That
fan,
is sick, though. That is just like preying on people's love of their club.
Yes,
and love
it is. You're right. I hate that. But people love the game too much. They're going to allow the league to continue to take advantage of them in ways because they love the sport. They can't give it up. They can't remove
also
it from their life.
Another angle as well. If I'm Don Garber, I'm going nuts.
It undermines MLS.
It absolutely does. We already have teams parachuting in the middle of an MLS season to play these ICC games.
Right. Don Garber has to sit there and watch 90,000 go watch a meaningless game between United and Liverpool, where, you know, he's having a hard time getting 15,000 at a game that actually has consequences.
I agree. They can't sell out the New York Derby. They can't. Yankee Stadium is not full for the New York Derby, and Harrison 25,000 isn't full. There's empty seats galore in this league. And we're trying to, you know, this is a country that's trying to find itself again after not making a World Cup. Where are we on the soccer spectrum? What do we need to do to change to be better? We're always banging on about soccer culture, and now we're importing it, and we're allowing it to happen. Where is U.S. soccer on this?
Well, because there are probably people... Look, there's a chicken or the egg thing here, too. Like, there's probably people within U.S. soccer that believe any infusion of high-level soccer into American sports culture is great and will benefit American soccer as a whole. Like, if I take my son to go watch one of these, like, if La Liga comes to MetLife Stadium here in North Jersey, New York, and I'll take Jack when he's 4 years old or something like that to go watch it, you know, he won't know the difference between La Liga and MLS.
His first experience.
He'll see soccer, and then he'll think, well, I like that. That was fun. I want to see it again. So now what am I doing? Oh, he enjoyed it. Okay, well, now I'm going to see NYCFC at Yankee Stadium. What they'll tell you.
But again, I go back to what I say about it'll be faux and it'll be pastiche, because you won't have those traveling fans. You won't have the ultras. When I go to see Barcelona play, or if I go to see anybody else play, I want to be sat beside someone from Barcelona. I don't want to be sat beside Jan and Craig from Michigan who've brought the four kids along.
Well, again, I'm sensitive to saying that you're not going to be sat beside a true fan. I mean, I'm sure that there are tens of thousands. If you add up the Real Madrid and Barcelona fan groups in this country.
Hardcore guys who go to the game every week in, week out, travel. That is part of the atmosphere, Andrew. It absolutely is. I want to eat Spanish food. I want to have Spanish beer. I want to come out into a balmy heat afterwards, which we probably can't replicate.
I know.
I'm dead again. It's just the rank commercialism of it. And
that's ultimately what it is. Because all these other things, I do believe that there's explanations for, but it's just that bothers me.
And to the people I say that this is a good thing for U.S. soccer, I have only one comment for them.
Bollocks! Bollocks! Bollocks!
All right.
There you go. We will have a red card man of the match a little bit later on in this program, as we will have your mailbag as well. I should mention, we're talking about MLS. There were a couple midweek games. DC United are on a tear right now. Wayne Rooney, two more goals last night on the heels of his phenomenal moment the other night. It seems like he is finding his footing in a way here in MLS that much faster than what we saw from guys like Steven Gerrard, Lampard as well. Some of that was injury based, so it's been a pretty promising start for him.
Yeah.
I'll have a little bit more specifically on not last night's DC United game, but the one from over the weekend later on.
His breakout moment is basically what you're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah. You're talking about finding your footing. Yeah, just on one of the Rooney free kick from last night. I think if the Portland goalkeeper could find his footing.
It's a league not known for its goalkeeper.
It's literally the worst free kick goal let in I have. One of the worst I've ever seen. Like, Rooney's got it around the wall and it's gone. It's right in the middle of the goal, and the goalkeeper, I don't know what he's doing.
It's always been strange to me that the U.S. produces so many high-quality goalkeepers that go and go on and thrive in major leagues around Europe. And granted, some of them, they've gotten their starts in MLS, and a lot of great MLS keepers do exist. But man, the league, we did a whole segment last season on like hilarity of goalkeeping errors in MLS. It's
yeah,
weird.
I suppose I shouldn't be too harsh because in Ligue 1, we had a goalkeeper.
You're right.
In Samba, who literally gave away two goals to PSG, the Cannes goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So.
Let's talk a little bit about La Liga because it does start this weekend, as we pointed out in our Around the League earlier this week in the podcast.
It kind of started already. I know it's the UEFA Super Cup, but I felt like that game had a bit more on it than previous seasons.
Yeah, and you even had the Spanish Super Cup that preceded that between Barcelona and Sevilla. A game that, for some reason to me, feels like it's more meaningful than the Community Shield. I don't know why. I feel like it's essentially the same thing, but for some, I don't know. I seem to put more value in Spain's than England's.
There seems to be more weight on it, definitely.
I can't explain why that is. Maybe the fan, I don't know.
Sometimes the matchups are a bit more juicy, maybe.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, what a way to start out the UEFA calendar with that that matchup yesterday.
Yeah, it was incredible after 53 seconds even. And he's a beautiful bastard.
Diego Costa.
I've gone full circle on him. Remember how we deplored him and we hated him? Basically because he was doing all the deplorable things he did
Wasn't
in a
Danny
Chelsea
Mills
shirt.
That we just spoke to, who said that's like his favorite player?
Yeah, just because of what he does. It's a clip ball over the top, I think, from Godin on the first goal, which I just want to talk about that for a second. And Costa flicks it on, and Ramos is right beside him. Probably no need to be that close that early on, and he's out of position. It goes in behind. Varane is totally caught off guard. He runs onto his own header and just flies into the box and blasts a half volley past Keylor Navas. It was a really great goal. Now, Navas helped them out by deciding to go low instead of staying high at his near post. But the next thing, you have, obviously later on, you have the equaliser, which was Bale swinging in across to Benzema, which was a very good goal too. And then you have Costa deciding to dribble Sergio Ramos's head down the line to the delight of every Liverpool fan. I never thought Diego Costa could do anything to bring such joy to Liverpool fans in particular. But that was just, oh, I've watched that on a loop so many times.
Really?
I mean, I don't want to wish to inflict violence on anyone, but oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Bang,
I can picture
bang.
Jurgen Klopp at home watching that, doing his bizarre hand celebration that we didn't talk about earlier this week.
We didn't.
But I feel like it bears mentioning.
It does bear mentioning.
Very unusual.
He realized what he was doing was strange, and in his head he said, I just got to commit to this. Because if I stop doing it, then people will think, oh, he was definitely doing what people, you know, what it looks like he was doing. Do you know what I mean?
And he definitely wasn't doing that.
No.
But it looked
bad.
Yeah, weird.
Now, what was good was that the internet intervened for us, thankfully, and removed the smutty thoughts of onanism from our minds and went with a jackhammer. You know the Kango hammer?
Okay, yeah, we'll go on that.
So
we'll
they put in a Kango hammer over the crotchal region, so it looked like he was just doing that, which was good.
They cleaned it up.
Speaking of strange things to see from that game, Sergio Ramos taking the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Gareth Bale, like, at what point does Gareth Bale assume the reins here as the senior Galactico?
I wonder if he's too nice. Like, he's not going to do
the Ronaldo things.
Or what we saw, you know.
Could you imagine
like
if anyone...
the way Pogba and Alexis Sanchez battled over the penalty last Friday. Like, I wonder if Bale's just not that guy.
But Bale is replacing that guy.
Yeah. Let's talk about Real Madrid now. And kind of their moment of transition here. Because you're right. Ronaldo, I mean, it's an enormous vacuum that's left with him departing. And Bale is going to be asked to fill that. Now, the question becomes whether or not you believe he's capable of it. I say, I'm going to give you a soft yes. And I say soft yes because I believe for where he's at in his career age-wise and for the talent that we see from him, 16 goals in 26 games last year, not to mention what we saw from him in a substitute appearance in the Champions League final. Yeah, I'm sold on his ability. It's just a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy. Ronaldo, by and large, always was. We don't see that from Bale. And it's such a cliche, and it's kind of an annoying one, but that old saying of the best ability is availability. Bale can't fill Ronaldo's void if he's not healthy. I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if it's just his physical makeup or if he needs to be rotated on a more regular basis to make sure that he's available for the more important games. That's the only concern I have with him because from a pure talent standpoint, I really do believe he's good enough to fill those shoes.
See, I don't think, first of all, you're replacing a guy who scored on a pace for Real Madrid that is unprecedented. Mm. And Bale is not that polished a finisher. Ronaldo made himself a polished finisher. And also converted himself into a striker. And I don't, even last night, Bale was swinging in the cross for Benzema. Is that what Lopetegui has in mind? Because if it is, then Bale won't assume the mantle of Ronaldo. He simply won't.
Well, he can still now, assume the mantle of being their best, their playmaker without needing that to always be goal scorer.
I don't think that's going to be the case either because it was interesting to read Graham Hunter. Who was given a kind of a La Liga preview. Graham Hunter talked about the other players in that team, the Iscos of this world, who now... Graham Hunter has an interesting theory that this Ronaldo gone doesn't make them a better side, but rather a better team. Because in terms of all the units contributing, whereas Ronaldo took up with his ego and with the way he played, took up so much oxygen from that side. Which is an interesting theory. Like, because you automatically think losing a player like him diminishes a team, but in another way, can it maybe allow other players to blossom? Is Bale going to be one of them? I'll tell you what, he needs to stop the deference to... I mean, Ramos doesn't... I'm not saying he can't take penalties, he took the penalty excellently, but that's where you are assuming the mantle. And I felt last night was a game where Atletico Madrid, who can clearly see opportunity in the passing of Andrés Iniesta and Ronaldo from the passing sounds so morbid, but you know, from them leaving La Liga, you can see, if you look at that team, the way they went about their business last night, they see an opportunity to maybe win a domestic title.
Absolutely.
Maybe push on in Europe.
We'll talk about them in just a sec. I just want to wrap on Real Madrid by asking you about their defense, because it's the only element of them. I look at, you know, even with Ronaldo leaving, I still look at attack-minded players like Benzema and Bale. I think I saw a stat that the last six European goals scored by Real Madrid have come at the foot of Bale and Benzema, which is encouraging. You know, we see Isco. I mean, I still feel very Asensio. Now, I mean, you talk about guys who are going to have to step up. I think now is the time where we see
him
rise.
But he's going to get that opportunity. Right. I don't think we're going to hopefully we don't have the argument, well, where do these guys fit in? I think
it fits pretty naturally in a 4-3-3 that Lopetegui wants to play. The question for Real Madrid was and probably still is their defense. They gave up 44 goals last season in the league, which is not egregious, but...
They were bad in the league last season.
But that's the thing. They're not being compared against the league as a whole. They're being compared against Barcelona, who conceded 29 goals, and Atletico Madrid, who conceded a ridiculous 22. Even Valencia, who finished fourth, conceded fewer goals than Real Madrid. To me, it's what I would look at if I was citing a reason why I don't believe that they would win the league. Now, I love Rafael Varane. And I think the addition of Courtois is is valuable for them. I do like Keylor Navas. But I don't know how it's going to work, if it's going to be like what Barcelona used to do with Bravo and Ter Stegen, where one plays cup competitions, one plays league competitions. I don't know. Or if Courtois will just assume that mantle. But, you know, is Marcelo still one of the best fullbacks in the world?
Defensively,
is Sergio Ramos still one of the best center halves in the world? You know, there are some questions that you, I think, have to raise when you talk about their defense.
You're right, and surely part of Zidane's reasoning behind leaving was he saw that some of these guys are in decline, like Ramos, and albeit some at different levels of decline. And maybe he didn't fancy the rebuild and decided to get out, because it's hard. Look at these guys. These are Real Madrid lifers, if you will. These are guys who have been there through the thick and the thin, and mostly the thick of the last few seasons, and it's difficult to transition out of them. But so that is a question mark.
Yeah. Let's see. You mentioned Atletico, who won the Super Cup yesterday. Let's talk about them now briefly. I'll tell you what, man. I'll give it away now. My pick is going to be Barcelona to win the league. But somebody's going to have to, like, you have to lay out a real argument as to say why Atletico Madrid are not every bit to be considered the title favorites that Barcelona, or I have Atletico Madrid ahead of Real Madrid, to be totally honest.
Just like it was last season then?
Yeah.
I agree with you, and I think the ability of Simeone to keep coming back with this team. Now, it's helped that he's been able to keep key players, although that's not really true. He has lost some along the way, but the ability to keep the like of Griezmann, to keep the goalkeeper, to keep Diego Godin, these guys look like they're kind of on a mission. And he's also added a few pieces to the team as well.
Yeah, Thomas Lemar comes in, a pretty expensive signing from Monaco, over £50 million.
A much sought-after signing. Arsenal and Liverpool both were after him.
Some cover up front for Diego Costa in bringing in Nikola Kalinic, who I'm really curious about to see like what kind of headspace he's in after his interesting summer. Santiago Arias coming over for more defensive cover from PSV Eindhoven. And then one that I'm really curious about, Rodri, the midfielder who makes the move on like a really cheap move from Villarreal. But I was reading something at the BBC where they're referencing him as being like a potential Spanish replacement one day for Busquets in that defensive midfielder role. So, and like you say, the fact that they retained all of their key players.
The spine of the team remains.
Well, it shows a belief. Like, I would say that nobody knows a team better than the guys who are on it. And so, you know, it's Barcelona that are coming calling for Griezmann. It's Manchester United that are coming calling for Godin. Oblak, the keeper. You know, any number of clubs were calling for him. And these guys all chose to stay. That tells me something about what they think this team is capable of, which I would have to agree with.
And if you add in also the key attributes that they have when they don't have the ball, they're so well organized. Yeah. That really makes it, like the hard work, you can't underestimate their hard work and the way they play in terms of defensively without the ball. It's such a huge thing that everyone buys into that.
Yeah. And then things too, like, you know, Saul, he's only 23.
Yeah.
You know, Koke is really now hitting his prime at 26. You know, Lucas Hernandez, who we just saw at the World Cup, he's only 22. I don't know. I feel like worst, you could tell me if I'm wrong here, but I would say worse teams than this for Atletico got to Champions League finals and lost to Real Madrid.
Mm. I'd have to go back and look and think about it, but fair. I would also say that, do they see a repeat of 2014 where they won the league and went to the Champions League final? And also, the Champions League final will be at their stadium.
Yeah.
Which is going to be hugely attractive kind of beacon on the horizon that they would want to go for. And I don't know, they were poor in the Champions League last year, but I don't know, something from the UEFA Super Cup, which I never thought I'd say, but something from that told me they mean business.
Yeah, I think so too. And then the club that I have them truly contending with for the league, Barcelona. Ultimately, for me, I don't see Barcelona kind of waltzed to that title last season, and it's hard for me to see any drop off when, okay, losing Iniesta certainly means a lot, and perhaps I would say Paulinho losing him means something. But additions like Arturo Vidal and Malcolm and Arthur, Messi, yeah, he's on the other side of 30, but he's 31, and I really think that he's still Messi. Suarez is still Suarez. I look at Barcelona, and I just still see so much strength there.
I have concerns.
Okay.
And I'm not... Arturo Vidal is a good player, right? But we are seeing the passing of a maestro. We're seeing the moving on of like one of them that was. We don't know what Barcelona really are without Iniesta. I know towards there were periods last season where he didn't start or yeah. he kind of came off because you know he's getting older. But and not that they inhabit the same position or do the same things. I'm not saying that. But bringing in a player like even when they brought in Paulinho, I thought. Is this in the grand tradition of what Barcelona do? No. Did it work? To an extent. I feel like you see someone go like Iniesta and you think that is like a concert pianist or somebody who conducts a great orchestra conductor and you're replacing him with Axl Rose.
Well, yes and no.
Vidal to me...
But I don't know that
doesn't
he's
fit.
But I don't think he's the replacement. I think Barcelona.
No, he's not a replacement.
Barcelona prepared for this day when they brought in Coutinho, and I said about him what I thought of him over the summer with Brazil, where I felt like I was witnessing him becoming the new
right.
As much as Neymar becoming the new face of Brazil. And I feel like now it's his chance to do a similar thing Barcelona.
I know exactly what you're saying. You're going to see him drop deep. 30 yards from goal, pick the ball up and kind of link the play together and maybe even be on the end of things as the in what Iniesta was. I'm not for one second suggesting that Vidal will do that. But even compare him to Rakitic, to Busquets, I don't see how he fits.
Oh, Vidal.
Vidal.
I just think it's... I think for Barcelona, maybe... And maybe Busquets was this a little bit, but you know, one thing that like Real Madrid always had with guys like Sergio Ramos and Pepe, for all the fault, and Casemiro now, for all the things that you may want to say about them, those guys are bulldogs.
Yeah.
And when you look at Barcelona, I always wonder, do they have that? Like that guy who's just an annoyance, that a talented, gifted bother to the other side. And I think Vidal can be that guy for them.
I'd worry about him with red cards. I worry about him, the fact his feet are slowing down, that he will go to ground too much. I would worry about those things. He's quite impetuous.
Well,
I don't know.
I feel like their squad, I think what was important for them, I saw this another stat at the BBC that Barcelona last season had six guys who started 30 or more games. Real Madrid had one. Casemiro was the only one. I think that matters. I feel like Barcelona needs
Casemiro is the better footballer.
Though. Well, that may be, but I'm saying the point is that I think Barcelona needed a bigger squad. Yeah, I think they need more depth. I think they need to be able to rotate more. Because their goal now, you know, I think they feel good about the league. For them to watch Real Madrid hoist the Champions League the way that they have the last few seasons, I think Barcelona feel like, okay, it's our turn. We have to get back to that. And they had to get bigger. And I feel like that they've done that in this summer.
Okay. My final point is I compiled a list of players that I associate with Barcelona, you know. Midfielders, Brian Laudrup, Jose Mari Baquero, Xavi Iniesta, Busquets, Arturo Vidal.
He's different. You're right. He is different.
I don't know. I
think they thought maybe we were lacking
and
some
also
of that.
And also that reported move for Paul Pogba as well. This seems scattergunny.
Well,
this doesn't seem like a very kind of thought out, what's in the best traditions of how we play approach.
Well, that's the other thing is their transfer window obviously is still open. So who knows what moves are still to be made. I mean, we're sitting here at noon on August 16th. So things are still going to happen. Speaking of which, I did want to just run through a few of the other elements that are on my mind about the league aside from these three teams. I think Valencia, who finished fourth last season in Spain, they add Michy Batshuayi, which... In 10 games last season for Dortmund, he scored 7 goals and had an assist.
He's excellent.
Yeah. I look at that and that could be important for them.
A seasoned La Liga campaigner like Kevin Gamero, Denis Cheryshev.
Yeah.
Who we still, I mean, I think the jury's a little bit out on Cheryshev yet.
He had a promising summer.
Yeah. Well, again, we're being regularly told that players aren't bought on tournament performances, but that's the most we've seen of Cheryshev anyway, so it's going to be interesting to see how he does. And also, they had a good season last season, And I was all excited to watch them play Real Madrid at Valencia, and Madrid walked in and just slapped them around. Mm. So I don't know where they're at. It's going to be interesting. Can I put one to you as well?
Yeah.
Athletic Bilbao fascinate me.
Okay.
They fascinate me. They had a 16th place finish last season, and it's not so much the players they have, but their policy of signing only Basque players.
Yeah.
What happens to that 70 million that they got from Kepa Arrizabalaga? Like, does that go straight into the academy? Does it go into player wages? Does it go into the stadium? Because it's not going on players.
They have
such a rigid rule. I'm wondering, is, you know, 16th not a great, it's okay, they were above, well above the relegation as it turned out, but I'm just wondering, is this the time that this kind of isolationism catches up with them?
That's a great question. One club that I wanted to mention to you that kind of caught my eye was Real Betis, who had their highest finish last season since 2005. Now, they did lose Fabian Ruiz, midfielder who goes to Napoli, but we talked at the end of last year about how look out for this mass exodus of players from Sporting Lisbon in Portugal. Let's see who capitalizes on that. Betis was able to bring in William Carvalho on a fairly discounted rate at £13 million. So, you know, he'll slot into their midfield and on a free transfer. A guy who we got to know a little bit this summer with Japan, Takashi Inoue, comes over now to Real Betis.
Love him. I love everything about him. He's a fantastic footballer. Yeah. I will watch them, or I will tune into their games just for him alone. Oh, he's class.
Yeah. So, and they were an exciting side last year. Games that with a lot of goals, lots of goal scoring. So I'll be very curious about them. Do you I said Barcelona is my pick. I think it's going to be really tight at the top with those three. I'll go same as last year. Barca, Atletico, Real.
I'm going to just say Atleti.
Okay. Atleti, and I can't fault you for that.
Atleti, Barca, Real Madrid.
Kind of rooting, like I'm picking Barcelona, but I'm kind of rooting for Atleti to win.
Does Lopetegui, are there transitional seasons at Real Madrid? Does he get time? I don't know.
No, that's a club where we've always talked about how the demand. Zidane almost didn't make it. He had won back-to-back Champions Leagues and almost didn't make it through this season.
Gone by Thanksgiving.
Let's see, before we get to the mailbag, I know you had a quick thought on Ligue 1. And we should say, I don't mean to give short shrift to Serie A or the Bundesliga.
We will get to them.
We were intending on being able to talk about them today, but the news about Spanish football coming to North America kind of trumped some of what we had in mind.
Yeah, so I did just a few Ligue 1 notes because, there's some interesting things going on there. Yeah. First of all, I begin this section by having French music playing underneath. I demand it. It must happen.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's French Montana. If you wanted French music, my apologies. Better?
Yes, I begin this segment with a piece entitled Beaucoup de cadeaux pour PSG, which is French for many gifts for Paris Saint-Germain. They beat Cannes 3-0, Andrew. The Cannes goalkeeper deciding that the best thing he could do early on in the game was to kick the ball right into the middle of the PSG attack, and Neymar slotted home. A nonchalant Neymar. A Neymar who didn't look like he was bothered whether he was there or not, which is his general countenance for the season. Tim Weah scored the third after hitting the post, to be fair, with a fine effort. The goalkeeper also pretty much gave him that. So that was
Weah tackled him into the net. I mean, it was a nice work by him, but you're right, he had some help. But it comes on the heels of him having scored in PSG's last tune-up game.
I think the important thing is that Tuchel is being good on his word and giving him the opportunities.
And he's taking advantage.
He is. Lyon beat Amiens and looked like the team best equipped to attempt to challenge the PSG monopoly. Bertrand Traoré, a rejuvenated Memphis Depay, and should they manage to keep him, the much sought after Nabil Fekir, key men for this team. That was a pretty easy win. And Bertrand Traoré, who was once of Chelsea, looked pretty good in that game. Lots of chances. Looks like he's developing as a player. Amazing when you get games, how that can happen. Marseille hammered Toulouse. Florian Thauvin and Payet. They are a team that will be... I think they're going to look to banish the memory of that pretty bad Europa League final. Thauvin came off the bench. That was a good hammering that they handed out. Monaco, they took care of Matt Miazga's Nantes. And Falcao got a goal. That's pretty much all you could say about that one. And just to check in on another American angle to finish off with, former NYCFC manager Patrick Vieira got off to a losing start with Nice against Stade Reims and now has to deal with want-away striker Mario Balotelli. 43 goals in 66 games is excellent, Andrew, but it appears, according to Julien Laurent, that there's not that much interest in people taking on Why Is It Always Me and his contract.
It's Mario Balotelli all over again. He has one year left on his contract. He did really well for Nice, but Nice were really good to him as well to sort of relaunch his career, really, that was going nowhere before he joined the French Riviera. And now he says he doesn't really want to be there, doesn't really want to work with Vieira, the new manager, who, by the way, they played together all those years ago at Man City. But the thing is, no one is coming for him. No other clubs. Marseille were interested. They made a bid last month for Balotelli, but way below the 10 to 15 million euro mark that Nice want for the striker with 1 year left on his contract. So it's one thing that Balotelli wants out, but if no one comes for him, then he will have to stay at Nice. The problem is, while he's still there, Nice can't really sign another big name striker, because if Balotelli ends up staying, then they can't afford to have two big name striker on their books. So it's a bit of a problem for Nice as well. If he wants to go, he can go, but he needs to go out quickly so they can replace him.
What a headache for Patrick Vieira.
What a strange career in general.
Oh, odd. Balotelli. And still relatively young. Well, not relatively.
I mean, he's 28. In his prime. Yeah, I wonder. I really do wonder what his
goal scoring record was good, but I told people last season, remember, he didn't turn up for a game, got into a little bit of an argument. It was beginning to brew up there, and now Vieira has to deal with it.
Yeah. So there you go. That is league. Mailbag.
Mailbeezy. At CO Soccer Pod on the Twitter machine, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Daniel Findling gets the ball rolling here. Hello, JJ and Andrew. I absolutely love the podcast. You guys have a great show. While watching the Arsenal v Man City match on Sunday morning, August 12th, I noticed Cech, the keeper for Arsenal, was wearing a helmet. Are helmets in the future of soccer? Is it going to be like hockey, where nobody wore helmets, to as it is in today's game, where a player wouldn't think of not wearing one? I know in this country there's a lot of research on concussions in the NFL and other sports. I believe in Europe they study subconcussive injuries, like the type of heading a soccer ball repeatedly. Keyword is repeatedly. Petr Cech wears that helmet because it must be 12 years ago now, he was involved in an incident with Stephen Hunt at Reading, where he was going for a ball and Hunt challenged and there was a collision and he cracked his skull. And he's worn it ever since he came back from that injury. Now, the research is, I wouldn't say it's split on it, but it's ongoing. And there is genuine concerns about the effects of, like you said, Daniel, repeatedly heading the soccer ball. And some doctors say that there is no way we can go on doing what we're doing. Others are not so sure, and that it may affect other players in different ways. Alan Shearer has a very good documentary, which should be accessible online, from the BBC that he did last year, about heading the ball and head injuries in soccer. Whether helmets come in like we see them in hockey, not in the immediate future, but
that's the thing.
Once the research gets more, I'm not sure you're wrong. Daniel,
no,
a few years ago, I would have said no chance. Now I'm thinking, I listened to a conversation with Dr. Bennett Amalu recently, where he said soccer will soon have to outlaw heading. It's his view from the data that he has that it cannot go on, that it's too dangerous.
I think heading is too ingrained in the sport to say that you can no longer do it.
Right.
I think they would go to what Daniel just emailed first.
Some kind of concussive belt.
Something to wear around your head before they outlaw it. I mean, it's just such a huge part of it. It's hard to picture the game without it. So I think they would turn to other methods before they just said you can't head the ball. I mean, look, you've already seen on youth levels here in the U.S., you know, heading
it's been banned.
Heading is outlawed. But that changes once you hit a certain age pretty early on. But this is the direction that things are trending. You know, as we gain more research, it becomes more difficult to just suppress what appear to be facts. So if the research continues to trend in the direction that it is for soccer, then, yeah, I think you will have to see something.
But I would say there is not consensus yet on that. Not yet, anyways. Cody Knorr. He's a Tottenham fan, Andrew, and he got in touch with us because he has an English friend who tells him about songs, anti-Semitic songs, that are sung at Tottenham fans. And Cody wants to know, is it that bad for Tottenham supporters in England?
Now, well, it's hard for me to answer that because I have never lived in England, so I couldn't tell you. But now from the stories you hear from other Tottenham podcasts that I listen to and just things that I've read over the years,
it exists.
That's the thing. It's hard to say if it's worse for Tottenham than, like, I think every fan base gets it in terms of, like, you know, getting into fights, getting things like that. Now, I do think that's been reduced over the years, but because Tottenham has this historically Jewish element to its fan base, I think they get it in a different form, a really ugly form.
Yes.
Oftentimes in a flat-out anti-Semitic form. I don't know if that means that it's worse for Tottenham fans than it is for however an Arsenal fan will get ripped on, but that's pretty bad when you start to bring anti-Semitism and bigotry and things like that into the way you view your sports. This isn't a blanket thing. It's not like every chant ripping on Spurs is of an anti-Semitic nature.
No, it's not.
But it isn't there.
And I know it was a couple of years ago, but West Ham fans visiting Spurs got in trouble over songs that were sang. So, look, it's there. But like you said, every fan base has their, not every fan base, but a lot of fan bases have their, whether it be Hillsborough, whether it be the Munich air disaster in the Manchester United's case, where certain fans have songs or chants that are extremely offensive and derogatory directed towards those issues. And for Spurs, it would be of an anti-Semitic nature.
Yeah.
Michael Brem, JJ and Andrew, brackets, don't call me Andy. From listening to the pod, I have heard Andrew stress often about the length of the show. You reference research and charts that apparently show ratings drop significantly after the hour mark.
It's jarring.
To this I say, bollocks. I don't know who is being surveyed for this research, but these people must be dolts.
No, it's real quick. It's not a survey. It's literal data of every person who listens.
Can you imagine
people
someone
aren't being surveyed?
Can you imagine someone in a shopping mall going over? Excuse me, sir. Would you like to take a survey? Oh, why? I'd love to. At what point do you stop listening to Caught Offside? Excuse me, who?
Right. It is like a literal chart of all of our listeners, not like individually, but it just shows, okay, this many thousands are listening at this point. And then as it, like, it gives you the timeline and you can see, like, I don't know how else to say it.
He said,
I'm not making it up.
He said, my feeling is longer shows, more content, more Caught Offside is awesome. Screw it. Go for 2 hours. Love the show.
I would black out at about 90 minutes.
It's very kind what he's saying. Love the show. You guys are great on air together. Can't wait for more shows.
No, it's an incredible compliment.
Thanks, Michael.
I just wish that more people felt this way.
Yeah. What? More people do. I don't know. Connor McCoy. Hey, guys. Y'all did an amazing job covering the World Cup. Y'all are hands down my favorite soccer podcast right now.
Wow.
Keep it up. If Chelsea are able to keep Hazard and Willian combined with the signings of Jorginho and now Kovacic and Kepa Arrizabalaga, do you think Chelsea can get into the top four and possibly challenge for the title?
Challenge for the title, that feels a little bit far-fetched to me, but they can they should absolutely be contending for top four.
Well, here's some of Connor's reasoning. Tottenham haven't made any signings. Man U seems to be in disarray, and Arsenal are a year away from challenging for top four. I also think Sarri's style of play, a style that the likes of Hazard and Willian have never had while at Chelsea, will benefit them greatly. I agree to an extent on that. I think this couple with no Champions League play will allow them to focus solely on the league, get into the top four, and maybe even make a surprise challenge for the title. Fair points, but I think they'll definitely be in a top four challenge. Definitely.
Yeah, I would absolutely think that too.
At Seth the Panda. Over under, James Maddison gets 12 goals, 12 assists this season for Leicester. Last podcast, we didn't really get to talk about him. He had a good performance against United. But
those are lofty numbers.
Very lofty numbers for a guy coming straight from the Championship and a guy who's pretty young.
I might go under.
I would think so too. And also, as good as he was against United, United sat off. You know, United really didn't press Leicester at all. They were very passive and looked to, you know, to counterattack. And Maddison got a lot of time on the ball. A lot of time.
One thing, I'm sorry, I'm slightly distracted. To the last emailer about Chelsea, I agree with him. Like, yeah. Chelsea 100% should, but I'm being such a D.
Go on.
But for his citing of Spurs not making signings as the reason that that they're vulnerable. So
that tweaked you.
Well, again, he's not wrong, but I just feel like it's very easy. It's an easy, low-hanging fruit thing to say, but when you actually look deeper, so last year Spurs, you know, were, I guess, would you say significantly better than Chelsea? I mean, finished third to Chelsea's fifth.
Yeah, they were better.
So that you have to say it's a better 11. So who from Chelsea, if we're talking about summer signings, who from Chelsea that they signed would slot into Spurs starting 11? If you want to give me Jorginho, we can certainly have a conversation about it. I don't necessarily know that I can say it's a lockdown 100%, but I would say, okay, I'll concede that. They also brought in Robert Green, no. They brought in Mateo Kovacic, who I would say no, I don't think so.
It's better than Eric Dier.
And they brought in Kepa Arrizabalaga, who I'm Hugo Lloris is not coming off his best season, but he is a World Cup winning goalkeeper.
Look at you going deep on this.
But I'm like,
a Chelsea fan can just say,
well, they didn't sign anybody. Well, how many of your signings are getting into that first team? So,
and it just doesn't
I'll give
mean,
you Jorginho. But Spurs after not, that, like, okay, so one
look,
guy?
Yeah, but look at the question. Spurs not signing anyone doesn't mean Chelsea are in a title race. That's how you phrase that. Simply.
Yeah. Again, he's not wrong in what he's saying, but I just felt like I was just thinking about that, and I felt like I had to say something.
Cyril Lartigue. Considering Pep got Sterling to net over 20 times in a season, I think both of you could manage to score at least one goal if you played.
This is what I'm talking about.
If you played every minute of a season up top at City with Pep coaching you. Good point, Cyril. One listener, whose name I do not have written down for some reason. Actually, it was more than one listener. One listener tweeted about us having T-shirts and merchandise this year. So I'm going to just put this out there and retort to everyone. Hypothetically, if we were to do that, what would people want? What would people want to see on a T-shirt from us?
That's a great question.
I want to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm going to think about this.
This is from an iTunes review for Help a Fan, which we will be getting to next week. We will start the first round of Help a Fans, but there's a question within this. The title is from a soundbite. Okay, so you give a title to your review. The title is from a soundbite occasionally played on the pod. I scoured the web, but I'm unable to find the clip. Can you give me some help, JJ? And the soundbite is...
Oh, it's crap. Oh, it's bloody rubbish. Rubbish!
I love that guy.
It's brilliant. That's Brian Clough. I guess in the 70s, coaching Nottingham Forest, and the cameras turn up, and he's quite vocal about the quality of play in training.
That's exactly what we were talking about on our last podcast. Break them down to build them back up. Well, that's what that's what the great ones do.
Clough did do that. He punched Roy Keane. That's it.
Oh, my God. It seemed to really catch you off guard. Are you okay?
Yeah, yeah. I thought I had something else to add.
No, if that's it, that's it. That's we move it. On. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter or caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com.
Red card.
My red card and my man of the match kind of mirror one another.
Oh, interesting. Do go on.
Okay, so my red card is the ending of the Columbus Crew-Houston Dynamo match from over the weekend. I know there were some midweek MLS matches. This is from over the weekend. We're in stoppage time, and it's 0-0. And then this happens.
Spurting it left, Artur. Affle. Mullins. Zardes! don't feel the flag should have been raised. Jossy Zardes went almost two full games without a shot. But this one is the haymaker.
Well, you can see what the complaints are about. It's here. Mullins attempts to head the ball along.
On the ball into Zardes, this is in stoppage time to win the game. Patrick Mullins clearly attempts to head it from an offside position. How it's allowed to stand, I'm having a bit of a hard time with. Taylor Twellman tweeted afterwards, Mullins does not touch the ball, which, by the way, I don't know that that's definitive.
That's not definitive.
Mullins does not touch the ball, and it was determined that he didn't, quote, impact nor interfere, unquote, with the defender chasing Zardes, thus ruled onside.
Nonsense.
This was from MassiveReport.com. Sounds intense. And it's a segment called Anatomy of a Goal. It says, as seen above, Mullins was clearly offside when the ball was played. Nonetheless, a player may be offside when a ball is played so long as they do not interfere with the play,
right,
interfere with an opponent, or gain an advantage from an offside position. Does Mullins gain an advantage here from being in an offside position? Only if he absorbs the defensive attention of the goalkeeper, takes a defender away from Zardes, or actually plays the ball. So the remaining questions are whether Mullins absorbs the attention of a defender or whether he actually touches the ball.
He may have done all three.
If either of these are the case, then the goal should be called back. Right. There's a still shot of whether or not he made contact with the ball. And I'll say this, it's close enough that I think bare minimum you have to say it's inconclusive. But the other thing, does Mullins attract Joe Willis's attention, the keeper
of
for
course,
Houston?
Of course, because you're
right. He has to. I mean, look, I guess ultimately it's hard to say. Only Joe Willis can really know if his attention was altered by Mullins going for that header. But you know, it was so blatant, the attempt from Mullins, and it was so close to him making contact that I think you have to give Willis the benefit of the doubt on this one and say that it did alter his focus and attention in some way. And whether or not it would have changed anything, you know, who knows? But I don't know. I watched the replay 100 times, and I can't believe that the goal was given.
Now, the defending's not clever on it, but that's not the point. And it reminds me of Wayne Rooney, the goal, I think it was... Mata scored at Preston in the Cup, where Wayne Rooney just kind of body swerves out of the way in an offside position and it goes past the keeper. But he's in front of the keeper. You're interfering with play.
Yeah.
Now, there are some decisions where first phase and the next phase of play is very obvious that there's no need to stop. But that one is it's symmetry. One happens after the other. It just works as a move, as one phase,
yeah,
and therefore he's offside.
And you mentioned the Rooney thing. I sometimes am okay with it when the goal is allowed because and a player is doing all he can to get out of the way of the shot or whatever. But this is one where, I mean, Mullins is clearly trying to make contact with the ball. So, I don't know. I was dumbfounded that goal was given, and it was huge. Winning goal in the 91st minute.
And where was the VAR?
It was unhelpful.
Yeah.
In this situation.
Mm. My red card is Bayer Leverkusen's social media. And again, my red card will mirror my man of the match in some ways.
Okay.
I don't think there is a more cringy thing in modern football than football clubs' social media accounts, or rather the people that run them, trying to initiate mega bants with another rival. And sometimes the club Twitter account get it right, like when Borussia Mönchengladbach, with much self-deprecating humour, changed their Twitter name to A German Club because they saw a bar in Glasgow was struggling to spell Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
Or Bristol City's occasional gifts. They have their gifts of their players coming in and out. I'm okay with that. But when a club account goes out of its way to insert itself into the story, force themselves into the story rather, or just plain don't stay in their lane, all for a savage tweet or a burn that will garner the retweets and the clicks and the views, then it's too much. When an Arsenal fan account tweeted a video of Petr Cech almost calamitous attempt to play out from the back, whoever was operating the Bayer Leverkusen English Twitter account decided to be clever and tweet a goal involving their former keeper, now at Arsenal, in a move that led to a goal. They had something like, "We might know a guy." And they were reacted to just one of these random Twitter fan accounts. It wasn't official anything. It was they were going out of their way to get involved here. And then they, in case you were all wondering how to play out of the back, and they showed this great goal. Now, they retweeted their own tweet on this one as well, which seems as if they were really, you know, going out of their way to get involved. Now, Cech responded after the game when he saw this and voiced his displeasure with the tweets. But I don't even need to read that out. Know your function, know your purpose. Don't get involved with this stuff. You have the Bayer Leverkusen verified account. And I don't like the fact that this is true, but in some way you represent that club and the values it purports to have. And there's a professional footballer's code of conduct. I'm pretty sure Bernd Leno was embarrassed by this. I'm pretty sure he didn't want himself in a former life to be used as an example against the current incumbent who he's trying to unseat. It's all very unseemly. And it was it worth it? Like, was it that funny? Not really. It didn't work for me. And I don't know, man. Just stay out of it. Like, I hate this kind of thing. You're just the man with the password to the Bayer Leverkusen Twitter account. You're not a player. You're nobody.
I agree with you 100% on this one.
Don't try and insert yourself.
Yeah. When I read it, I was... it was kind of like,
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It felt
cringy and embarrassing. And also, it felt like it crossed the line.
But to me, it felt so forced.
Really forced.
In that I still may not love it, but if it's a rival club doing it to needle their rival, then I get it. But, like, what is Arsenal and Bayer Leverkusen? Like, other than Leno now being a link between these two clubs, like, what, like you say, what are you doing getting involved in this?
That's my point.
Yeah, also, it seemed weird a little bit for Leverkusen to come to the defense of a player who just left them.
Yeah, and another point is, as well, Petr Cech's a professional, and he's probably on the way out of that club. And he has pride, and he has a bit of honour in what he does. And he's fighting for his career right now. And you're not. You're sat behind a desk, but you have the imprimatur given you by being the Bayer Leverkusen social media guy. You're nothing more than a guy with a password and a computer. Mind yourself, behave yourself, know your role.
I feel like we should hire someone to run our Twitter account, and that person suddenly just starts taking, like, savage shots at other podcasts that we just, like, never wanted anything to do with.
Isn't that me?
kind of is, actually. That's true.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
Let's see. I say that this mirrors my red card because my red card was the ending of one game. My Man of the Match is the ending of another one. This one, DC United and Orlando City.
Ah.
5 minutes into stoppage time, DC setting up for a corner kick. The score tied 2-2.
DC United going all out after that. Zostad cleared. A foot race the other way. Look who's running hard after defensively. Wayne Rooney, that net is empty. Big collision by the captain. That is unbelievable effort. Rooney putting one up. Acosta.
Oh, the drama.
That's phenomenal. FS1, JP Della Camera on the call. Watching it live, it was like jaw-dropping stuff. First off, before we even get to Wayne Rooney and what he did there, I'll be honest. Some people say, bring up Usted for the corner. It's a calculated risk. What are they doing? There was 6 minutes of stoppage time. We were up to minute. We were 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
It was never going to be the last kick of the ball.
Do you not think...
What were they thinking doing that?
Do you not feel a sense of desperation around that club right now?
But it was... If they were losing, fine.
Right.
But it was going to end in a draw.
In a regular season game.
And, like, this would hardly be the first... Just ask Japan. This wouldn't be the first time that we've seen a corner kick go horribly wrong and spring an attack the other way.
Let's not start that argument again.
To bring the keeper up when you know it's not going to be the final kick of the ball... That was a shocking decision that nearly backfired spectacularly. But thanks to Wayne Rooney, who's Say what you want about him. He's got his detractors. And I saw people smugly mocking this, you know, mocking the fact that it was a foot race, that it was more, you know, like just two slow guys run. I don't know why people need to hate, because it was just awesome hustle. No matter what you think of him, I was so impressed by it. Just his ability to get back, win the tackle, and
it was a great tackle.
And then just like continue the move and play in that ball from what was it? Would you say 45 yards out? It was perfect for the win. It was. I thought it was great.
If I'm criticizing anything on that, I'm not criticizing Wayne Rooney.
No.
What was the Orlando goalkeeper doing? The angle he took up. That's a pass. He can see that cross 45 yards, and that's the position he took up.
It's in the air long enough.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's close enough to him.
He could have come for it
He started to, and then...
And he put himself in a bad position.
Right. He kind of like aborted halfway through, and... Now he's in no man's land.
But that is the only criticism I'm handing out. Rooney was just excellent.
Yeah.
They say he is a legend.
They do say that about Wayne Rooney. That ad is shocking.
Yeah. I mean, we always have to have a negative on this podcast, it seems. But that's the Casero El Diablo wine advert from 2011. And it's some of the worst acting you'll ever see. But Wayne delivers the line with poise.
They say... He is a legend.
It's just that it's so over the top in its seriousness. I don't even blame Wayne Rooney for bad acting. Like, it's him, Ryan Giggs. Who's the third in it? Patrice Evra.
Patrice Evra, yeah.
I mean, they're being asked to be so over the top dramatic for a situation that never calls for that level
for
of drama.
For reasonably priced wine.
Yeah. It's so weird. Maybe people should Google it.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's quick and it's funny.
My man of the match is the social media account at Barnsley Football Club. This is a letter that Barnsley Football Club sent out. Dear Chris, sorry for sending you a letter at random, but I felt like I wanted to reach out to you and get in touch. I've noticed through social media that you've had a bit of a hard time recently. I'm not sure what it is, but I hope everything improves for you as soon as possible. You've been a fan of the club for many years and always supported us. So we want you to know that if the favour needs returning and we need to support you, please do let us know. You are welcome to swing by any time. My office door is always open and we finally got a new coffee machine. A huge thanks to Alfie Mawson for that. Alternatively, you may have noticed the squiggle on the back of the player lettering on the shirts. It's for the Mind charity. They are an EFL partner this season and do some really great work. I've included their contact details below. Keep supporting the Reds, Chris. We'll keep supporting you. Yours sincerely, Gauthier Gagné, Chief Executive Officer. How cool is that?
That's beautiful.
It is pretty cool.
Is really nice.
I mean, if
do you know any bit of the backstory here, who Chris is and like what?
From what I understand, because they've obviously blocked out his address, he was somebody who appeared to be struggling, a Barnsley fan who appeared to be struggling with... I don't know, having a bad time, having a tough run.
So that was a tweet? Was it sent to a specific person?
No, like, this is a letter.
Oh, they tweeted a picture of a letter that they wrote to him?
This
I'm confused now.
So I guess Chris posted the letter on social media.
Okay.
And that's a letter that they sent.
Wow.
To him, because it's a private letter, something they had noticed on.
So how did you see that? Who retweeted that?
Someone on Twitter, a Barnsley fan on Twitter.
That's very nice. That is... You're right. That's what it's...
I mean, if you're going to use social media for something, that seems to be a pretty solid use.
No, that's very nice. That's a nice note to end on. I hope Chris is doing better, and I hope that whoever he is, I hope that did something to help him in some small way. That's what these teams, I hope they all know that they have the power to do that. Like, simple, small gestures. And they can completely alter somebody's day, month, year without really needing to do all that much.
Well, Chris Ryder was the fan, and he had shared his struggles with anxiety and depression on Twitter, and they picked up on it, and they done something really, really nice, and he tweeted it out himself, actually, with the caption, "Best football club in the world."
Wow. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well done, yeah. Barnsley.
They certainly have a fan for life if they didn't already in Chris Ryder. That's nice. Well, that's our show pretty much. Before we get out, tomorrow night is my fantasy Premier League draft. a league that you used to be in, and then you you did that thing where you made us all realize that you're better than us, and you left because it's beneath you.
No, I did not
that whole thing.
No, I didn't. I stopped giving it the commitment. You know, I stopped logging in on Fridays. I left I told you the story of where I left my team for 2 weeks.
Right.
And then, I like shot up the table.
Yeah, but then when you started to refocus, you plummeted.
Yeah, right.
It's maddening. I still don't know that soccer was meant to be a fantasy sport, but what the F.
Yeah, like, just get involved.
We're in it now, so.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for me? Any like sleeper that maybe I could get kind of.
After this week? Not really. Avoid Cardiff players.
It's a good point. It is so damn difficult, though. Like, I mean, now granted, most leagues, like we were late on this one this year, getting everything together because the league we used to use closed down.
Toga's
it's no longer. But like, if you're somebody who drafted Kevin De Bruyne with the number one overall pick, like many people probably would have, and now he just suddenly, he's just not playing this week. No reason. He's just not going to play this week. Like this, in fantasy football, in the NFL, when you draft your quarterback, you know this guy's playing. Like there's no reason that he's just not, we're just not going to use
him. Yeah, you're right. Soccer has
it's maddening.
It's way more nuanced.
And you don't know until an hour before, and with games that start at 7:30 in the morning, you're probably sleeping when the lineup has been put out. I've given up on some fantasy leagues, but you know, I've done them all over the course of my life. This is the hardest.
Can you imagine what Ranieri, when he was at Chelsea back in the day, nicknamed the Tinker Man, who could make changes at any moment? It would have drove you crazy if you had Chelsea players.
Yeah, it's absolutely maddening. But thanks for your advice. I don't actually think you gave me any.
No.
Nevertheless. Well, hey, this was fun. Enjoy the games this weekend. Next week, I will be once again on the... we won't be here face-to-face. And then you won't be the week after that. It's sad. It's the last time I'll see you for weeks.
Good.
That's nice.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.